नमस्तु मावेद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Oh, those speakers are there. Okay, so when we're chanting here in this Anastup, then the first syllable is Surita, the second one is Udata, right? Hare Krishna, right? So that means when you're doing the Panchatattva Maha Mantra, it would be Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya, right? Does that make sense? Okay, Sambhava Parva, section C is 100, right? Huh? Vaishampayana said, the monarch Shantanu, the most adored of the gods and royal sages, was known in all the worlds for his wisdom, virtues, and truthfulness of speech. The qualities of self-control, liberality, forgiveness, intelligence, modesty, patience, and superior energy ever dwelt in that bull amongst men, namely Shantanu, that great being endued with these accomplishments. And conversant with both religion and profit. The monarch was at once the protector of the Bharat race and all human beings. His neck was marked with three lines, like a conch shell. His shoulders were broad, and he resembled in prowess an infuriated elephant. It would seem that all the auspicious signs of royalty dwelt in his person, considering that to be their finest abode. Men, seeing the behavior of that monarch, Men seeing the behavior of that monarch of great achievements came to know that virtue was ever superior to pleasure and profit. These were the attributes that dwelt in that great being, that bull amongst men, Shantanu. Sure, truly, there was never a king like Shantanu. All the kings of the earth, beholding him devoted to virtue, bestowed upon that foremost of virtuous men the title of King of Kings. And all the kings of the earth during the time of that Lord Protector of the Bharata race were without woe, fear, and anxiety of any kind. They all slept in peace, rising from bed every morning after happy dreams. Owing to that monarch of splendid achievements resembling Indra himself in energy, all the kings of the earth became virtuous and devoted to liberality, religious acts, and sacrifice. When the earth was ruled by Shantanu and other monarchs like him, the religious merits of every order increased very greatly. The Kshatriyas served the Brahmanas, the Vaishyas waited upon the Kshatriyas, and the Shudras, adoring the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, waited upon the Vaishyas. And Shantanu, residing in Hastinapur, the delightful capital of the Kurus, ruled the whole earth bounded by seas. He was truthful and guileless, and like the king of the celestials himself, conversant with the dictates of virtue. From the combination in him of liberality, religion, and asceticism, he acquired a great good fortune. He was free from anger and malice, and was handsome in person like Soma himself. In splendor he was like the sun, and impetuously of valor like Vayu. In wrath he was like Yama, and in patience like the earth. O king, while Shantanu ruled the earth, no deer, boars, birds, or other animals were needlessly slain. In his domains the great virtue of kindness to all creatures prevailed, and the king himself, with the soul of mercy and void of desire and wrath, extended equal protection unto all creatures. Then sacrifices in honor of the gods, the rishis and pitris commenced, and no creature was deprived of life sinfully. Shantanu was the king and father of all, of those who were miserable and those who had no protectors, of birds and beasts, in fact, of every created being. During the rule of the best of Kurus, that king of kings, speech became united with truth, and the minds of men were directed towards liberality and virtue. And Santanu, having enjoyed domestic felicity for 60 and 30 years, retired into the woods. 6 and 30 years, so 36 years. So here we see Santanu. This is, in one sense, many will consider this the beginning of the Mahabharata. This is also another of the stages where you can start Mahabharata. One is from the very beginning, where you have the full chapters that give the summary. The other is from Uparichara Vasu, and the third is from Santanu. So most start from Santanu because this directly comes into the Pandavas. But we see Santanu was all these qualities he had. That's what made him great and special, right? It doesn't say he was just, you know, a really powerful guy that would kick anyone's backside who made anyone trouble, and everyone was afraid of him, and that's why everything worked nice. Does that make sense? In other words, if people do what you say because they fear you, don't ever consider for a moment you're anyone special, right? Dogs can get you to fear them, right? They show enough teeth and come up and growl or bite you a few times. You fear them. You stay out of their way. You understand? That's not leadership. That's dogs. Does that make sense? Leadership means you have these qualities. He has anger like Yama, but he has patience like the earth. So if you only have anger and no patience, don't think you're a leader. Does that make sense? So in management, others do what you say because they respect you, not because if you don't, you're going to give them trouble. Does that make sense? So that's why we hear all these things. Then we learn what is the real culture. Here, other managers were peaceful, right? At first, most of the time it talks about the people were peaceful and not bothered by so many things. But here we see they're talking about that the kings were peaceful, right? Kings live in a life of politics. So, and always worried that someone's going to try to take over. But these kings were peaceful because no one was badly behaved. No other Kshatriyas wanted the throne. They were happy. Everything was peacefully going. There's no need. Does that make sense? So that means in management, the higher you up, it should be all the managers below you are also happy. Right? These are the signs. Right? It didn't say that all the other kings were bowing down to Santanu out of fear and would always do what he said and in this way. No. It says out of respect. And because he was nicely behaved, everyone else became nice. Right? He knew the balance of Dharma, Artha, and Kama. Right? Did it say here he was totally into Kama and, you know, just like to do no work, just eat nice food and sit at home and be lazy? Right? And that's why he was special. Is that what it said? It said he knew what Dharma was and Artha. Artha means getting facility, create. So that means activity. So that means he was religious and active. And he knew how to balance that with the properly with sense gratification. Does that make sense? Right. So this is a leader. This is leadership. So this is what we should do. It's not, the story is there, but we see underneath this all this, all these things. These are for us to learn. Is that too smoky back there? Yeah. Santanu's son, the Vasu, born of Ganga, named Devavrata, resembled Santanu himself in personal beauty, in habits and behavior, and in learning. In all branches of knowledge, worldly or spiritual, his skill was very great. His strength and energy were extraordinary. He became a mighty Kaur warrior. In fact, he was a great king. One day while pursuing along the banks of the Ganges a deer that he had struck with his arrow, King Santanu observed that the river had become shallow. On observing this, that bull among men, namely Santanu, began to reflect upon this strange phenomena. Remember, this is already he's married Ganga Devi. He had all the different sons. She dropped them all into the Ganga. The Vasus, the other seven Vasus, they went back to the heavenly planets. But Ganga means Devavrata, then he didn't. Because when he was the one that was pulling on the cow, right? So he got to stay here a little longer. And why was it that he was a brahmachari? Yeah, so they didn't want to continue a dynasty on the earth, so they wanted him to be a brahmachari. But then at the same time there was the element that he had to be one also. Anyone? Yeah, why was that?
Because otherwise Satyavati, she won't get married to Maharaj.
Satyavati won't get married to Maharaj Santanu. Alright, you understand? So, in other words, for his father's pleasure, then he wouldn't get married. He would perform all his duties and all that, but he wouldn't get married. And then there's one subtle cultural point that comes from the Vasus. Means Devavrata is, do you remember this Vasu? Dyu. But why Dyu specifically had to be the brahmachari and why he had to stay? Yes, because his wife said, let's steal this cow from Vishishta, right? Okay, it's the husband's duty to fulfill the desires of the wife, right? I mean, she may have so many wild desires, they're to be taken care of. But not if they're against religious principles like this, that you're going to disturb the Brahmins or the deities or like that. Does that make sense? So out of attachment for his wife and wanting to please her and prove to her how good a husband he was, therefore he was out there, you know, stealing the cow. Does that make sense? So to learn here is, one, the wife shouldn't ask the husbands to do things that are really inappropriate, and two, the husband should not take those things that seriously. Right? Like that. So these are things to... Right? These are practical. So now, you know, Ganga's gone, he's in his kingdom and all that, and so now then he's going and then he's coming upon this phenomena. The Ganga, which is big river, right, then is like a little bit of water. One day, while pursuing along the banks of the Ganges, a deer that he had struck with his arrow, King Santanu observed that the river had become shallow. On observing this, that bull among men, namely Santanu, began to reflect upon this strange phenomenon. He mentally asked why that first of rivers ran out so quickly as before. While seeking for a cause, the illustrious monarch beheld that a youth of great comeliness, you understand, comeliness means very beautiful, well-built and amiable person. Amiable means nice, right? Means if you're good-looking and not nice, that means you only had a little bit of piety left that gave you a good-looking body, right? Because the body is the lesser of the things, right? If you have a good, subtle body, that's more expensive, right? A good body, that's cheaper. Does that make sense? I can pay some money and do things to the body, right? Do some plastic surgery, you know, go do some exercises, pump some iron. I can do it. That's the cheap thing. But to get the subtle body to be beautiful, that's the expensive thing. Right? So here we see he was very handsome and amiable. That means very nice, pleasant, interacted with people very well. Right? So something special. And amiable, like Indra himself, and had his keen celestial weapon and had by his keen celestial weapon checked the flow of the river. The king, beholding this extraordinary feat of the river Ganga having been checked in her course near where that youth stood, became very much surprised. This youth was not none other than Santanu's son himself, but as Santanu had seen his son only once a few moments after his birth, he had not sufficient recollection to identify that infant with the youth before his eyes. The youth, however, seeing his father, knew him at once. But instead of disclosing himself, he clouded the king's perception by his celestial powers of illusion and disappeared from in his very sight. Right? This is like, you hear it here. Does that make sense? Bhishma. So he could disappear, he could do all kinds of things, but you never hear of him doing it, because he was just a king here, he just did that. Right? So that's why it's so special when he's submissive and doing different things and all these things, because he was more powerful than anybody. I mean, other than, of course, Krishna and Balaram. Right? It means all these others are there, this and that, you know, but he was, you know, you don't say Krishna has the strength of 10,000 elephants or Indra has the strength of 10,000 elephants. You don't hear that. You only hear that of humans, and that, of course, very rare. Right? There's only five of them. But the point is Bhishma, they don't compare him to 10,000 elephants because he was celestial. Does that make sense? King Shantanu, wondering much at what he saw and imagining the youth to be his own son, then addressed Ganga and said, "Show me that child." Ganga thus addressed, assuming a beautiful form and holding the boy decked with ornaments in her right arm, showed him to Santanu. Santanu did not recognize that beautiful female bedecked with ornaments and attired in fine robes of white, although he had known her before. Ganga said, "O tiger among men, that eighth son whom thou hast some time before begat upon me is this. Know that this excellent child is conversant with all weapons. O monarch, take him now. I have reared him with care. Go home, O tiger among men, taking him with thee. Endued with superior intelligence, he has studied with Vashishta the entire Vedas with their branches." The entire, that means all four, not one. Four. And branches. That means all the astronomy and all the kalpa, all the Sanskrit, Dharma Shastras, the philosophy, the Nyaya, all the Puranas. So he studied all that under Vashishta, right? Skilled in all weapons and a mighty bowman, he is like Indra in battle. O Bharata, both the gods and the Asuras look upon him with favor. Whatever branches of knowledge are known to Ushnas, this one knoweth completely. Who's Ushnas? Huh? Sukracharya, right? So he's the head of the demons, the Acharya of the demons. So whatever he knows, then Bhishma knows. And he studied under Vashishta. He is the master of all those Shastras, and the son of Angiras, Brihaspati, adored by the gods and Asuras, knoweth. So he knows what Vashishta knows, he knows what Brihaspati knows, he knows what Ushnas knows. All the weapons known to the powerful, invincible Ram, the son of Jamadagni, are known to this thy illustrious son of mighty arms. Who's the son of Jamadagni? Parasvami. O king of superior courage, take this thy own heroic child, given unto thee by me. He is the mighty bowman and conversant with the interpretation of all the treatises on the duties of a king. Thus commanded by Ganga, Shantanu took his child, resembling the sun himself in glory, and returned to his capital. Having reached his capital that was like unto the celestial capital, that monarch of Puru's line regarded himself greatly fortunate. And having summoned all the Pauravas together for the protection of his kingdom, he installed his son as his heir apparent. O bull of Bharat's race, the prince soon gratified by his... The prince soon gratified by his behavior, his father and all other members of the Pourava race. In fact, all the subjects of the kingdom. The king of incomparable prowess lived happily with that son of his. So his son, by his behavior, then he pleased his father, pleased all the senior, means the Pourava race, that means all the Kshatriyas, all the senior personalities of the kingdom, and all the citizens. Does that make sense? So that's by good behavior, right? Just like the wife, she by her behavior, then she conquers everybody in the family. Does that make sense? So this is the method. We can see up to now a wholly different method of being, in a leadership role, That is through qualities that one has prowess. It's through qualities that everybody is endeared to you. Right? It's not just by being tough or being nasty. Does that make sense? Very important. 4 years had thus passed away when the king one day went into the woods on the bank of the Jamuna. While the king was rambling there, he perceived a sweet scent coming from an unknown direction. The monarch, impelled by the desire of ascertaining the cause, wandered hither and thither. In course of his ramble, he beheld a black-eyed maiden of celestial beauty, the daughter of a fisherman. The king addressed her, said, "Who art thou, and whose daughter? What dost thou do here, O timid one?" She answered, notice he asked, "Whose daughter are you?" Right? He didn't say, "Hey, babe, want to go for a walk?" Right? You understand? He wants to know whose daughter she is, because if he's interested in the girl, it means he's got to go to the father. Right? Because if the father doesn't approve, the marriage isn't going to be of any quality. The children won't be of any quality. Does that make sense?
A question for before that. That Bhishma actually went back with Shantanu at that time. So then how they, since no minister, so nobody was there, so how they actually approved that he was actually a son?
Oh, how did the members of the means the ministers and that approve that he was his son? Because they knew he was there. You know, they would have known when he was born. Because he's 16 here, so just 16 years before he was born. So they knew he was born. They knew that Ganga was his wife. They knew Ganga Devi took him with him. So it wouldn't have been so hard. The difficulty is with Shakuntala, they didn't know that he was married to her. So therefore, they wouldn't understand this was his son. But here, all the senior members of the community knew that they were married. Yeah? Is that okay? She answered, "Blessed be thou. I am the daughter of the chief of the fishermen. At his command, I am engaged for religious merit in rowing passengers across this river in my boat." Right? In other words, the fathers are always trying to get their daughters engaged in pious activities for their merit. Right? Like that. Because by doing service, by doing all these different things, then they become very pious. Then when they grow up, they get married, then everything will go nice, they'll have nice children. You know, they'll have wealth, they'll have facility, they'll be protected. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, those girls who are engaged in pious activities, those are good wives, right? Not the ones that walk around trying to get you to notice them. Right? Does that make sense? Santanu, beholding that maiden of celestial form, endued with beauty, amiableness, and such fragrance, desired her for his wife. Repairing unto her father, the king solicited his consent to the proposed match. But the chief of the fishermen replied to the monarch, saying, "O king, as soon as my daughter of superior complexion was born, it was, of course, understood that she would be bestowed upon a husband. But listen to the desire I have cherished all along in my heart. O sinless one, thou art truthful. If thou desirest to obtain this maiden as a gift from me, give me then this pledge. If indeed thou givest this pledge, I will of course bestow my daughter upon thee, for truly I can never obtain a husband for her equal to thee." Santanu, hearing this, replied, "When I have heard of the pledge thou askest, I shall then say whether I would be able to grant it. If it is capable of being granted, I shall certainly grant it. Otherwise, how shall I grant it?" In other words, it's practical. If it can be granted, it will be done. Even if it's great trouble in that. But the point is if you say, you know, "Get me the moon, you know, in a box," you know, then it's like, hey, give me a break, you know. Does that make sense? The fisherman said, "O king, what I ask of thee is this. The son born of this maiden shall be installed by thee on thy throne, and none else shall thou make thy successor." Vaishampayana continued, When Shantanu heard this, he felt no inclination to grant such a boon, though the fire of desire solely burned within him. The king, with his heart afflicted by desire, returned to Hastinapur, thinking all the way of the fisherman's daughter. Having returned home, the monarch passed his time in sorrowful meditation. Now, why would a fisherman say that his daughter should be the queen and her son should be the heir to the throne? On what grounds could a fisherman do that? Anything? Think about it. Whose daughter actually is she? Forget the name. You know? Yes, Uparichari Vasu, right? So that means she's the daughter of a king equal to Santana. So she's meant to be the empress of the world, right? Therefore he could say with such boldness. Because if she was just the daughter of a fisherman, generally she wouldn't have such quality and characteristics as this, right? Like that. Because, you know, it's the thing, you don't get attracted to a fisherman's daughter, right? You know, you avoid those things. Does that make sense? So here, he didn't, no offense. So here he, he's saying the quality she has and everything she has, it doesn't connect here. Right? Because she has all the qualities of someone higher. So they can see in the Vedic culture, birth was not important. Right? So as far as intent and purpose goes, everybody will take this girl to be the daughter of the fisherman. Right? No one calls her the daughter of Uparichari Vasu that lives with the fisherman. Right? So the point is that she has the qualities of a queen. Therefore, she's accepted as one, right? That's the Vedic culture, right? Whatever your qualities actually are, that's what you're accepted as, right? Doesn't matter what your birth is. Yes? Does that make sense? So, but at the same time, she had that, Santana was attracted, and at the same time, then we see that the fisherman, knowing her background, then he could be so bold, right? But we see it's because of this desire, this, therefore, the Kuru dynasty was destroyed. You know, it's not direct, but I'm just saying it's one factor, right? Because otherwise Bhishma would have been on the throne. Then that means Dhritarashtra would not have been on the throne. It would have meant Duryodhana wouldn't have been in power. Means that the Pandavas wouldn't have been messed around. Things would have gone nice, right? But of course, being the end of Dwapara Yuga, Kali Yuga is coming, something has to start the trouble, right? One day, Devavrata, approaching his afflicted father, said, All is prosperity with thee. All chiefs obey thee, then how is it that thou grievest? Absorbed in thy own thoughts, thou speakest not a word to me in reply. Thou goest not out on horseback now. Thou lookest pale and emancipated, having lost all animation. I wish to know the disease thou sufferest from, so that I may endeavor to apply a remedy. Thus addressed by his son, Santanu answered, Thou sayest truly, O son, that I have become melancholy. I will also tell thee why I am so. O thou of Bharata's line, thou art the only scion of our large race. Thou art always engaged in sports of arms and achievements of prowess. But, O son, I am always thinking of the instability of human life. If any danger overtake thee, O child of Ganga, result is that we become sonless. Have you heard this line of thought before? Right? In other words, he's attracted by this girl. He was not thinking, means, of anything else. But attracted by the girl, then along with it, because he's religious, then there's also the element that if there are other sons, if anything happens to Devavrata, then the line will go on properly. Does that make sense? But you can see the method, though, that's being used. Truly, thou art alone to me as a century of sons. Right? What's a century of sons? Right? 100 sons. A century is 100. Right? I do not, therefore, desire to wed again. I only desire and pray that prosperity may ever attend thee, so that our dynasty may be perpetuated. The wise say that he hath one son, hath no son. Sacrifices before fire and knowledge of the three Vedas yield, it is true, everlasting religious merit. But all these, in point of religious merit, do not come to a 16th part of the religious merit attainable by the birth of a son. Indeed, in this respect, there is hardly any difference between men and the lower animals. O wise one, I do not entertain a shadow of doubt that one attains to heaven in consequence of his having begotten a son. The Vedas, which constitute the root of the Puranas, and are regarded as the authoritative even by the gods, contain numerous proof of the exercise of this. O thou of Bharata's race, thou art a hero of excitable temper, who is always engaged in the exercise of arms. It is very probable that thou wilt be slain in the field of battle. If so happen, what then will be the state of the Bharata dynasty? It is this thought that hath made me so melancholy. I have now told thee fully the cause of my sorrow. Right? He is 16. He could get him married, and his sons could carry on the race. Vaishampayana continued. Devavrata, who was endowed with great intelligence, having ascertained all this from the king, reflected within himself for a while. He then went to the old minister devoted to his father's welfare and asked him about the cause of the king's grief. In other words, he heard all this, but it still doesn't match up. Why would one... It's like this. We see kings that they have a wife, they have no son. Right? But they're performing their duties nicely. Generally, you see them doing a lot of austerity, right? So that then they may have a son, right? We think about it. All the other kings that wanted a child and were having difficulty, they're not lamenting and everything like that. That doesn't come from that. But he's not doing anything, right? So that means it can't be just he's worried about the son. Right, so that means he must be worried about the lady with whom he's going to have the son. Does that make sense? Because that lamentation then can stop everything. Does that make sense? Vaishampayana. Oh yeah, there we go. O bull of Bharata's race, when the prince questioned the minister, the latter told him about the boon that was demanded by the chief of the fishermen in respect of his daughter, Gandavati. Why is she called Gandavati?
Because her body smells as fragrant.
Because her body was fragrant, right? And any other name she had?
Yeah.
Yojana Ganda. Why? And how big is a Yojana? 8 miles, right? That's a long way. 8 miles, that's 12 kilometers. You know, it's like from here to the temple on our road, that's almost a kilometer.
From here to Krishnagar.
Yeah, like from here to Krishnagar, right? Not that. Don't need... Think how much you would save on incense, right? No incense, no perfumes, right? Then Devavrata, accompanied by many Kshatriya chiefs of venerable age, personally repaired to the chief of the fishermen and begged of him his daughter on behalf of the king. The chief of the fishermen received him with due adorations. And, O thou of Bharata's race, when the prince took his seat, just nicely, nicely, nicely.
He's a water.
Why, he's been living here for during the flood or something?
No. It was every day following us from the temple.
Oh, it's from the temple, okay. Just
think it's not open.
That's okay. As long as it's outside, it can stay outside. Leave it outside, just leave it alone out there. That's all. Just we don't want it inside, that's all. Really? Anyone claims this dog here? Anyone knows this dog? You know. From? Oh, from the Grihasthapara. Okay. It always comes over here. Oh, it's the Sankirtan dog. Oh, it's the Sankirtan dog. It's back again. Okay, now let's see where is it going to go. Okay, just leave him alone. Maybe he'll just stay on the side. And it's the Sankirtan dog, so he's used to. He thought some Sankirtan was happening here, Don. I've never seen a dog that, even though you chase him out, he's so friendly.
No, because he gets attention.
Huh?
That's why he says, because he gets attention.
Attention where?
Any. It's a distressed dog. Because I guess the flatland will really have time.
Okay, now he's sitting. Now everyone can be peaceful. Sit down. Don't look at him. Just let him. Okay. Now that everyone's taken their seat, now we can continue. Okay. O bull among the Bharatas, thou art the first of all wielders of weapons, and the only son of Santanu. Thy power is great, but I have something to tell thee. If the bride's father was Indra himself, even then he would have to repent of rejecting such an exceedingly honorable and desirable proposal of marriage. The great man of whose seed the celebrated maiden named Satyavati was born is indeed equal to you in virtue. He hath spoken to me on many occasions of the virtue of thy father and told me that the king alone is worrying of marrying Satyavati. Okay, so that means then means this fisherman, he has spoken many times with Uparichara Vasu, and he has said that the only one worthy of her hand is Santanu. Right. Let me tell you that I have even rejected the solicitations of the best of Brahmarshis, the celestial sage Asita, who too had often asked for Satyavati's hand in marriage. I have only one word to say on the part of this maiden. In the matter of the proposed marriage, there is on great objection founded on the fact of a rival in the person of a co-wife's son. O oppressor of all foes, he hath no security, even if he be an asura or a gandharva who hath a rival in thee. There is this only objection to the proposed marriage, and nothing else. Blessed be thou, but this I have to say in the matter of the bestowal, or otherwise of Satyavati. Vaishampayana continued, O thou of Bharata's race, Devavrata, having heard these words, and moved by the desire of benefiting his father, thus answered in the hearing of the assembled chiefs, O foremost of truthful men, listen to the vow I utter. the man has not been or will not be born who will have the courage to take such a vow. I shall accomplish all that thou demandest. The son that may be born of this maiden shall be our king. Thus addressed, the chief of the fishermen, impelled by desire of sovereignty for his daughter's son, to achieve the almost impossible, then said, O thou a virtuous soul, thou art come hither as full agent on behalf of thy father Santanu, of immeasurable glory. Be thou also the sole manager on my behalf in the matter of the bestowal of this my daughter. But, O amiable one, there is something else to be said, something else to be reflected upon by thee. O suppressor of foes, those that have daughters, from the very nature of their obligations, must say what I say. O thou that art devoted to truth, the promise thou hast given in the presence of these chiefs for the benefit of Satyavati hath indeed been worthy of thee. O thou of mighty arms, I have not the least doubt of this ever being violated by thee, but I have my doubts in respect to the children thou may begettest. Vaishampayana continued, O king, the son of Ganga, devoted to truth, having ascertained the scruples of the chief of the fishermen, then said, moved thereto by the desire of benefiting his father, Chief of fishermen, thou best of men, listen to what I say in the presence of these assembled kings. Ye kings, I have already relinquished my right to the throne. I shall now settle the matter of my children. O fishermen, from this day I adopt the vow of brahmacharya, study and meditation in celibacy. If I die sonless, I shall yet attain to the regions of perennial bliss in heaven. He's made because you have to have a son to go to the heavenly planets, right? For the Karmakandis, right? That's what I was said before. Is even you've studied all the Vedas, you've done all that, if you haven't had a son, then it's not full, right? Because the Karmakandis are trying to go to the heavenly planets. So that's why it's there. So that's his point. But having taken this vow, he's making the point that I'll still be able to go to the heavenly planets because of the potency of the vow, and it's because someone else will have a son. Right? So son is being born, it's not his. Does that make sense? Like that. Vaishampayana continued, upon these words of the son of Ganga, the hair on the fisherman's body stood on end from glee, and he replied, I bestow my daughter. Immediately after, the apsaras and the gods with diverse tribes of rishis began to rain down flowers from the firmament upon the head of Devavrata and exclaimed, This one is Bhishma, the terrible. Bhishma then, to serve his father, addressed the illustrious damsel and said, O mother, ascend this chariot and let us go unto our house. Vaishampayana continued, having said this, Bhishma helped the beautiful maiden into his chariot. On arriving with her at Hastinapur, he told Santanu everything as it had happened. The assembled kings jointly and individually applauded his extraordinary act and said, He is really Bhishma the Terrible. Santanu also, hearing of the extraordinary achievements of his son, became highly gratified and bestowed upon the high-souled son the boon of death at will, saying, Death shall never come to thee as long as thou desirest to live. Truly death shall approach thee, O sinless one, having first obtained thy command. So, I think your smoke went out. Section 101. Vaishampayana said, O monarch, after the nupatals were over, King Santanu established his beautiful bride in his household. Soon after was born of Satyavati an intelligent and heroic son of Santanu named Chitrangada. He was endued with great energy and became an eminent man. The Lord Santanu of great powers also began upon Satyavati another son named Vichitravirya, who became a mighty bowman and who became king after his father. Before that bull amongst men, namely, Oh, before that bull amongst men, Vichitravirya, attained to majority, the king Santanu realized the inevitable influence of time. After Santanu had ascended to heaven, Bhishma placed himself under the command of Satyavati, installing that suppressor of foes, Chitrangada, on the throne, who, having soon vanquished by his prowess all monarchs, considered not any man as his equal. Beholding that he could vanquish men, asuras, and the very gods, his namesake, the powerful king of the Gandharvas, approached him for an encounter. Right? You understand? It means Chitrangada. He was so powerful that he became famous in the universe. But there was a king of the Gandharvas named Chitrangada also. And so he didn't like that. Right? Because they're not talking about him in the heavenly planets. They're talking about this earthly king. So, problem. Right? Right? This is why false ego should be avoided. Between that Gandharva and the foremost one of the Kurus, who are both very powerful, there occurred on the field of Kurukshetra a fierce combat which lasted full 3 years on the banks of the Saraswati. In that terrible encounter, characterized by thick showers of weapons and in which the combatants ground each other fiercely, the Gandharva, who had greater prowess or strategic deception, slew the Kuru prince. Having slain Chitrangada, that first among men and oppressor of foes, the Gandharva ascended to heaven. When that tiger among men endued with great prowess was slain, Bhishma, the son of Santanu, performed, O king, all his obsequies. He then installed the boy Vichitravirya of mighty arms, still in his minority, on the throne of the Kurus. In minority means? How? What does that mean? He's young. So what means, what is considered in the Vedic to be majority? 16. Yeah. At 16 one becomes adult. Right?
No question. How come the Chitrangada could go back to the heaven after inside the Gandharva after killing basically an emperor?
Why he was killed by Gandharva?
No. How can a Gandharva go back to heaven if he killed an emperor on the earth? I mean, this is such a big scene.
How could a Gandharva go back to the heavenly planets if he's killed an emperor? Because the demigods aren't bound by all these different rules. Like that. They're there to enjoy, not to. Yeah. And Vichitravirya, placing himself under the command of Bhishma, ruled the ancestral kingdom. He adored Santanu's son, Bhishma, who was conversant with all the rules of religion and law. So, indeed, Bhishma also protected him that was so obedient to the dictates of duty. Section 102. Vaishampayana said, O thou of Kuru's race, after Chitrangada was slain, his successor, Vichitravirya, being a minor, Bhishma ruled the kingdom, placing himself under the command of Satyavati. When he saw that his brother, who was the foremost of intelligent men, attained to majority, Bhishma set his heart upon marrying Vichitravirya. At this time, he heard that the three daughters of the king of Kashi, all equal in beauty to the Apsaras themselves, would be married on the same occasion, selecting their husbands at a self-choice ceremony. Right? What's a self-choice ceremony? Yeah. And what's it called? Swayambar. Okay. And do we know of the marriage rites, which one that's called? Prajapatya. Then that foremost of Kaur warriors, that vanquisher of all foes, at the command of his mother, went to the city of Varanasi in a single chariot. There Bhishma, the son of Santanu, saw that innumerable monarchs had come from all directions. There he also saw those three maidens that would select their own husbands. When the assembled kings were each being mentioned by name, Bhishma chose those maidens on behalf of his brother, and taking them upon his chariot, Bhishma, that first of smiters in battle, addressed the kings, O monarch, and said in a deep voice as the roar of the clouds, "The wise have directed that when an accomplished person has been invited, a maiden may be bestowed upon him, decked with ornaments and along with many valuable presents. Others again may bestow their daughters by accepting a couple of kine. Some again bestow their daughters by taking a fixed sum, and some take away maidens by force. Some wed with the consent of the maidens, some by drugging them into consent, and some by going into the maidens' parents and obtaining their sanction. Some again obtain wives as presents for assisting at sacrifices. Of these, the learned always applaud the eighth form of marriage. Kings, however, speak highly of the Swayamvara, the fifth form as above, and themselves wed according to it. But the sages have said that wife is dearly to be prized who is taken away by force, after the slaughter of opponents, from amidst the concourse of princes and kings invited to a self-choice ceremony. Therefore, ye monarchs, I bear away these maidens hence by force. Strive ye to the best of your might to vanquish me or to be vanquished. Ye monarchs, I stand here resolved to fight." The Kuru prince, endued with great energy, thus addressing the assembled monarchs and the king of Kashi, took upon his car those maidens. Having taken them up, he sped his chariot away, challenging the invited kings to a fight. The challenged monarchs then all stood up, slapping their arms and citing their nether lips in wrath. Loud was the din produced as in a great hurry they began to cast off their ornaments and put on their armor. The motion of their ornaments and armor, O Janmejaya, brilliant as these were, resembled meteoric flashes in the sky. With brows contracted and eyes red with rage, the monarchs moved in impatience, their armor and ornaments dazzling or waving with their agitated steps. The charioteers soon brought handsome cars with fine horses, harnessed thereto. Those splendid warriors then, equipped with all kinds of weapons, rode on those cars, and with uplifted weapons pursued the retreating chief of the Kurus. Then, O Bharata, occurred the terrible encounter between those innumerable monarchs on one side and the Kuru warrior alone on the other. The assembled monarchs threw at their foe 10,000 arrows at the same time. Bhishma, however, speedily checked those numberless arrows before they could come at him by means of a shower of his own arrows, as innumerable as the down on the body. Right? You know down? Huh? Hair means you have the hair and underneath there's the fine hairs like an animal's when they're cold in the winter. Right? So that's down. So how many hairs are there? Right? So like that. On your head's about 100,000. So on an animal that has down there'll be a few more, right? So like that many arrows. Then those kings surrounded him from all sides and raised arrows on him like masses of clouds showering on the mountain breast. But Bhishma arrested with his shafts the course of that arrowy downpour, pierced each of the monarchs with 3 shafts. The latter in their turn pieced Bhishma each with 5 shafts. But, O king, Bhishma checked those by his prowess and pierced each of the contending kings with 2 shafts. The combat became so fierce that dense shower of arrows and other missiles that it looked very much like the encounter between the celestials and the asuras of old, and men of courage who took no part in it were struck with fear even to look at the scene. Bhishma cut off with his arrows on the field of battle bows, flagstaffs, coats of mail, and human heads by hundreds and thousands. Such was his terrible prowess and extraordinary lightness of hand, and such the skill with which he protected himself that the contending car warriors, though his enemies, began to applaud him loudly. then that foremost of all wielders of weapons, having vanquished in battle all those monarchs, pursued his way towards the capital of the Bharatas, taking those maidens with him. It was then, O king, that mighty Kaur warrior, King Shalya of immeasurable prowess, from behind summoned Bhishma, the son of Shantanu, to an encounter. Desirous of obtaining the maidens, he came upon Bhishma like a mighty leader of a herd of elephants, rushing upon another of his kind, and tearing with his tusks the latter's hips at the side of a female elephant in heat. Shalya of mighty arms, moved with wrath, addressed Bhishma and said, "Stay, stay." Then Bhishma, that tiger among men, that grinder of hostile armies, provoked by these words, flamed up in wrath like a blazing fire. Bow in hand and brow furrowed with wrinkles, he stayed on his car, in obedience to Kshatriya usage, having checked its course in expectation of the enemy. All the what's the Kshatriya rule? Yes, if you're challenged, you accept the challenge. I mean, it's from a proper person and appropriate, but otherwise, if it's there, then one must accept. All the monarchs, seeing him stop, stood there to become spectators of the coming encounter between him and Shalya. The two then began to exhibit their prowess upon each other like roaring bulls of great strength at the sight of a cow in rut. Then that foremost of men, King Shalya, covered Bhishma, the son of Santanu, with hundreds and thousands of swift-winged shafts. Those monarchs, seeing Shalya thus covering Bhishma at the onset with innumerable shafts, wondered much, then uttered shouts of applause. Beholding his lightness of hand in combat, the crowd of regal spectators became very glad and applauded Shalya greatly. That subjugator of hostile towns, Bhishma, then, on hearing those shouts of the Kshatriyas, became very angry and said, "Stay, stay." In wrath, he commanded his charioteer, saying, "Lead thou my car to where Shalya is, so that I may slay him instantly as Garuda slays a serpent." Then the Kuru chief fixed the Varuna weapon upon his bowstring, and with it afflicted the four steeds of King Shalya. O tiger among kings, the Kuru chief then, warding off with his weapons those of his foe, slew Shalya's charioteer. Then that first of men, Bhishma, the son of Shantanu, fighting for the sake of those damsels, slew with his Indra weapon the noble steeds of his adversary. He then vanquished that best of monarchs that left him with his life. O bull of Bharatresh, Shalya, after his defeat, returned to his kingdom and continued to rule it virtuously. O conqueror of hostile towns, the other kings also, who had come to witness the self-choice ceremony, returned to their own kingdoms. That foremost of smiters, namely Bhishma, after defeating those monarchs, set out with those damsels for Hastinapura, whence the virtuous Kuru prince Vichitravirya ruled the earth like the best of monarchs, like his father Santanu. O king, passing through many forests, rivers, and hills, and woods abounding with trees, he arrived at the capital in no time. Of immeasurable prowess in battle, the son of the ocean-going Ganga, having slain numerous foes in battle without a scratch upon his own body, brought the daughters of the king of Kashi under the Kurus as tenderly as if they were his own daughters-in-law, or younger sisters or daughters. Bhishma of mighty arms, impelled by the desire of benefiting his brother, having by his prowess brought them thus, then offered those maidens possessing every accomplishment unto Vichitravirya. Conversant with the dictates of virtue, the son of Santanu, having achieved such an extraordinary feat according to kingly custom, then began to make preparations for his brother's wedding. When everything about the wedding had been settled by Bhishma in consultation with Satyavati, the eldest daughter of the king of Kashi, with a soft smile, told him these words. Okay, well, this is another thing coming up. Okay. So we see here that Bhishma went to the battle. He went to the Swayamvar alone. He didn't take an army with him. Right? Normally the kings go with the whole army so that when there's a battle, then they have some backup. He went alone. Yes.
Why are sometimes people referred to as the first of men?
First of men? Or bull of men?
No, it's
first among men. First meaning that they're outstanding. They're like the leaders amongst men. You know, it's the same as best. Best, first. You know, you get first prize, best prize, you know, first amongst men. And bull means, because bull is very powerful, but bull also resembles religion. I mean, is represents religion, right? So very powerful. So we see he's so powerful, but he's so gentle and careful with the girls. Does that make sense? So that a powerful person is gentle, right? Like that. He doesn't need to prove himself, right? People who are generally rough need to prove themselves, right? So we see here that then everything. So he did all this for his brother, right? Yes.
Another question, why Bhishma didn't research on the girls before the whole thing arrangement was
made? Why didn't he research on the girls, meaning?
It's like find out if there's already some arrangement being made or something.
Oh, yeah, well, because when you see a Swayamvar, you generally have an idea that there isn't anything. Because much of the time is that if there's somebody obviously to arrange with, they arrange it. And if it doesn't, then there's a Swayamvar. Because when it means, in other words, the girl, before she comes of age, the father arranges things. The girl never arranges her own marriage. But once she comes of age, if the father hasn't been able to find, then it's legal for the girl to make the arrangement with the father's approval. Like that. So then, generally like that. So then it's good. Because you're also talking here more passion. Right? Means the more sattvic, the more religious is that it's arranged by the father. So then it's a matter of its duty, they're compatible, they're matched very well, it will be a good marriage, they will develop attachment for each other, it will work very nicely. Yes? Yes. Why didn't Bhishma check first? Well, we see because he didn't check, it was a problem for him later, and that's what's coming up right now. Because he could have checked, and then he would have taken everybody but that one girl. And she would have chose Shalya. She wouldn't have chose anyone else. So then the other two didn't care. They didn't have anyone chosen, but she did. And then also when Shalya had come, of course he could have said, wait, I have, you know, already chosen this girl, and she has chosen me. Then it would have been another thing. Then he could have given. But also Shalya, out of his ego, didn't say anything. So we see is that, generally speaking, false ego and lust, these two things are all the causes of all the problems, right? So whatever problem can happen, it's in the Mahabharata. And you'll see that basically all of them come from this, right? But it is true, they could have checked. They checked enough to find they were qualified and good and all that. They did that much. But, you know, they should have checked more. Like that. But there is the element that he's getting the girls for his brother rather than himself. There is that element. While Arjuna was considering just for himself. Like that. Also the element is that, yeah, that's there. That would be there. Also he had to be really careful is that only if the girl was really into him, because he wouldn't want to make too much waves with Draupadi with someone who wasn't that much attached to him. Right, if Subhadra is very attached to him, then okay, then he could try to work it out. Yes. Yeah, you have to deal with Balaram, you know, Lord of the Universe. You know, it's like you think twice before that. One thing to note in this, how powerful Bhishma is who is Shalya? Yeah. No, but this is Shalya who's there? Yeah, like Shalya came? No, is
it?
No, it is Shalya. Yeah. So he's very powerful, right?
He's the second best chariot driver.
Yeah, he's the second best chariot driver.
But after Krishna.
After Krishna. So he's a special king. Yes? Is Shalya one of the five? I don't think so. You have Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana, Bhishma, I mean, Bhima, Jarasandha, and Kichika. That I know of, those are the five. That's why when Kichika was killed, and it wasn't that he was killed, okay, he was poisoned or he was shot with an arrow. He was punched and kicked to death. And not only that, he kicked him and punched him so much that his arms and legs went back into his body and his head, right? So you just have the trunk, right? And, you know, with the face sticking out. So when they stuck, and not only that, it wasn't that he was just left there in the assembly hall. He was taken out and put on the main gate of the city. So who does that kind of stuff, right? Only Bhima. So when they saw that, first of all, people wondered, what's that doing up there? And that, you know, and then they're going, and then they go, hey, that's Kichika. And then it's kind of like, you know. So then, oh, okay. So then, you know, then Duryodhana figured, there's only five of us who are that strong, and he was one of them. So that means only, you know, it wasn't me or Dhritarashtra or Jarasandha who killed him, right? Jarasandha's already been killed. Right, so that leaves four of them. So that means, yes?
And also I heard that there were only four people who killed Kichika. So Karna, Sauna, and Balaram.
Yes.
But three of them, they would not have been there. That's why they
killed. Aha. You hear what he's saying? He's saying there's only four people that could kill Kichika. What was it?
Karna, Shalya, Balaram, and Bhima.
Karna, Shalya, Balaram, and Bhima. So Karna was there at the palace, he wouldn't have done it. Balaram's in Dwarka, he wasn't known for doing that. Shalya, then, he was down in Madras, so he wasn't doing it. So that only left Bhima, right?
So nobody was putting up over there.
Yeah, well, no one else would stick him on the front gate.
Right,
because Bhima did that with someone else. After killing him, stuck him on the front gate. Anyone know who he was? Baka. Right? The Rakshasa in Ekachaka. Right? So after finishing lunch with the guy beating on his back, you know, then he killed him, and then after doing the same thing, then, you know, stuck him on the gate. Like that. So that way it's kind of like, when you see that, then you know Bhima's been here, right? Okay, so we'll end here. Continue tomorrow with section 103.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama.